Wait a minute. How come we didn't get your, like, what was your delay?
No, never mind that stupid stuff. Come on, John.
Well, you got to come up with something
David,
else.
David, why does he have to do that every time?
He doesn't have to do it every time.
Once is funny.
Why don't you do it?
No, I'm here. I'm not moving.
All right.
You can breathe hard if you want to, John.
All right. Okay.
I'm John Shoup.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shoup.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, welcome to episode 18 of Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. This episode is entitled Tech-Tac-Toe.
It's corny, but it works.
Actually, it's corny, but it works. One of the things we think is really important, and of course it's obviously important in the theater, is the technical people that you work with and the job that they do. A lot of times we focus on acting and the performers who get the bows that are under the lights and et cetera. But without good technical people and without good tech, as we say, a show can fall apart. And conversely, John,
it can be riveting.
It can be riveting, but it can also save a show that maybe isn't quite so exciting in the first place. Okay, so
absolutely.
Although we try to get all the elements at tip-top shape, sometimes tech is the thing that really impresses an audience.
It can really push things over the top, yeah.
I don't think people realize how important it is. I've sat through innumerable community theater productions where obviously tech is like a last minute thing. If the lights go on and none of the actors fall over, they think it's great. But really the things that bother me dreadfully are the little technical things that they can do something about. You know, I know in community theater, you don't have a lot of money. Sometimes you don't have a lot of space, but there are things that are within your control. And that is finishing off your costumes, finishing off your sets. Our friend Sandy Strain is like the major tech person where little things will just drive her crazy. Mm-hmm. And I've sat through shows with her where she'll focus on 2x4s that have been left unpainted and are in full view of the audience because they're off to the side or they're pretty far stage left or stage right. And obviously the constructors thought, well, it wouldn't matter if they were finished or not. And she goes nuts when they're not finished. Mm-hmm. Or creaking doors that don't need to creak that are, you know, good for setting a feeling about a place but are terrible when they are creak, creak, creak during the scene changes in the dark.
Oh, yeah.
You know, could just drive you nuts. And she is just super focused on making sure when she's on a tech crew, especially for scene changes and stuff, they rehearse tech just like they rehearse, the actors and the singers and the musicians. They run, well, you know that, John, because you do that.
Oh, yeah.
They run through scene changes. Everybody has their own assignment, and they try and get it down. Somebody once said, if an audience has to sit in the dark more than, I think it's 25 or 30 seconds, you lose them.
Mm-hmm.
You lose them.
Right.
And whatever momentum you've built up from the scene before, you have to go back and start all over again if the tech is long or noisy or distracting.
Right. And I mean, there are ways of fixing that. If you know a scene change is going to go longer than 30 seconds, which I have no idea why it should ever, but I think you taught me that, but a long time ago, Marcia. But I mean, then tech can also start to take on another life there as well. If it's a long scene change, if it has the right soundtrack over the top of it in your sound design, if the crew is choreographed in such a way that it makes it interesting to
fighting
watch
over the pizza box.
Well, but yeah, exactly.
Or if, keeps the pace at the same level.
If that
in
scene
some way.
Change yeah. then has been directed and thought about by both the director and the stage manager, that suddenly, and all the other designers involved, suddenly that even if it's going to be longer than 30 seconds, it could conceivably actually have a life of its own and continue the momentum of the show. And that's where sometimes, I think you just said you saw a production at Wagon Wheel Theater. Now, knowing that's professional theater, but I mean, we all strive for that kind of goal. where the scene changes were choreographed.
Oh, it was for All Shook Up.
For All Shook Up. Yeah, and you said that it just was amazing, the difference that it made in the show.
There was no break at all in the momentum of that show because Scott took time. He said he always wants to do this, but he never really has the time to do it. But he did it for this show, and every little scene change was either covered up by dancers doing their thing, or they came in with the stuff and then danced and then went out as the lights came up to start the next scene. And it was amazing. It really was.
But if you take that same show possibly and put it into a community theater or a high school setting, for example, if the scene changes if all you have is orchestrations over those scene changes, they can be long and very distracting.
Yeah, it's always good to give the audience, if it's going to be longer, to give them something to look at.
Right.
Well, that's why musicals have these kind of like, you know, crossover kinds of scenes that cover a set change going on behind the grand or behind a drop or something like, I mean, you know, some shows are constructed specifically so that the set
sound
changes
of music is very much that way.
Yes. Yeah. And, Music Man does some of the same stuff. Mm-hmm. And so you have that kind of stuff built in. Straight plays, non-musicals don't generally have that. I mean, we did a murder mystery recently where we had panels that were, you know, folding panels that actually were the set, and there were backdrops on each side of it, and then we had took place in London basically, and so we had, you know, costumed crew people who came out and actually had their own sort of characterizations as part of the scene changes, and some of the set changes were extremely simple. We had things brought out and the crew actually stood there while the scene was playing out because they were holding part of the set,
right,
and then left. And so that kind of stuff can be a lot of fun. And in essence, at that point, the tech is invisible. It's part of the play. It's not visible. Where I notice tech, and this is just me, is when scene changes are long and dark, okay, and where lighting is poor. That's those are the two mm-hmm. things that get to me mostly, is or where lighting is poor or late.
It always bothers me when you've had someone do a really dramatic, really convincing death scene, and then the lights go down. Only maybe not far enough, and the corpse gets up and walks away, and I'm going, well, that ruined that.
Yeah. Well, that's an actor problem more than a tech problem, but
yeah.
You're right.
But, you know, if you rehearse them enough in the dark getting off, then they don't need light to do that.
Right, yeah.
And I think, I'm distracted. I've been doing it for so many years, you know, that I go somewhere else. And the thing is that I'm sure that every once in a while, I probably have bad tech on my stage too. It happens. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I can be distracted by something as silly as, the soundtrack playing underneath a scene change, for example, and the show takes place in 1986. And you know that the song was written in 1982. Or in 1987, I mean, you know, so it's like a year after the show.
Yeah.
It's like, that song wasn't even written during that. Yeah, well, why are they using that as part of the soundtrack? It doesn't make any sense to you. You know, and it's like, you can just suddenly go, and it takes you right out of the moment.
That's why Moulin Rouge never made any sense to me.
Oh, well, that was also disjointed that worked.
Yeah,
come on, Dave.
That was supposed to be that way, David.
Okay.
Well,
yitchi,
and another thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another thing is taking time for costume changes.
Yeah.
Costume changes sometimes have to be done literally in about 10, 15 seconds.
Yeah.
So you have to rehearse those with whoever's helping the actor change.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find out where you're going to be with all the accoutrements, the shoes, and if gloves are necessary or whatever, right there, so they can literally step out of one thing and step into another.
And it's almost better if they don't have an entire costume but have enough of a – I mean, I shouldn't say this because it depends on the show, but, you know, the gloves can go – if it's going to make it a few seconds faster,
right,
a lot of times.
Yeah.
I mean, there's things like that.
Or they carry the gloves on in their hand.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, that it's still
part,
you know,
putting
or they
them
can
on,
still be
or,
putting
yeah,
them on
right,
as part
yeah.
of their character. And I think a lot of times, good costuming, bad costuming, in situations where they have to make a fast change, heaven forbid that the woman has to run off stage and put on a wedding dress that has 60 buttons down the back of it.
Yeah.
and the costumer hasn't thought about how to fix that issue so that the person can get in and out of the dress as quickly as possible. You know, so in a community theater, maybe where they, or a high school where they haven't taken the time to think about that or haven't had the time to think about that, they've got a crew of girls backstage hooking up this woman's dress, you know, whereas in a community theater that maybe had time to think about it, maybe they made, they faked it so that there was a slight flap there. There
Thank
was a zipper under
Velcro.
The flap or Velcro under the flap that it took care of that whole issue.
Two words, Velcro.
Velcro
two
is,
words, right.
I tell you,
right,
I don't know how many set pieces I've put together with Velcro.
Well, so, and another thing you can do.
So fast changing with Velcro.
Costume wise, sometimes you can underdress things. If you're if you have a costume that's skimpier than the one in one scene, that you can just take the outer one off and you'll be ready to go.
Yeah, we're going to have that problem this coming year with our production of Drowsy Chaperone because there's a production number in the Drowsy Chaperone that could go terribly awry if we don't have
that.
No, but it's going to be designed perfectly.
You have to design
where she,
it right.
She sits on stage and she has one outfit on, and when she stands up, she throws that off, and suddenly she's under in another outfit, and then she makes a turn and her skirt comes off, and then she makes a turn and her top turns into a dress, and it's a pretty cool event, and yet
it's not going to be so cool if it doesn't happen.
Exactly.
Like that.
So that's tech in the future, and people should come see and see if
you
get it right.
So costume is part of tech in essence.
Oh, by far.
Absolutely.
Because it can hold up a scene change.
Oh yeah.
You could have a scene change done in 15 seconds, but if the actress isn't ready to go back out in her wedding dress, it goes to 45.
Right.
You know? So and that's why it all is rehearsed. All fast changes should be rehearsed. Just as much as your lighting cue should be rehearsed, your sound should be rehearsed.
And they should be placed off stage in a position that is right where an entrance is supposed to be made.
Does it come down to, and we did an episode on this a while back, does it come down to picking the right stage manager so that that person is right on top of the issues? Not necessarily in planning every single change, you know, far in the future, but at least being there and knowing, hey, and being able to identify, there's a problem here, we've got to fix, and that kind of, because a lot of times I think that if there's nobody, one person in charge, then the issues, the problems with changes and with tech don't necessarily get reported. So you need kind of like a strong person at the helm. Am I missing the point there?
No, I think that's right. But their strength should come in during the final rehearsal period when they're starting to go through all these things. And if they see one place where the change is not going to be made quickly enough, then you say, wait, stop. We're going to do this again until we get it down to where it's going to be.
Yeah. Right. And I, what do you call people who have to have their hand in every aspect of every...
Control freaks?
Control freaks.
Yes.
Okay, so as a director, I'm a control freak. So even if my stage manager is newer and maybe doesn't have that much experience with that aspect of tech, as a director, I'm going to make sure that I also take that time. So I think I think a great stage manager makes all the difference in the world in a show where tech is so, especially, and I think most of the time, I hate to say it, but it's really musical theater where tech seems to be the most lacking, but I've gone to see straight plays that have had bad tech.
Me too.
And it's bad, but you know, these really quick scene changes where the entire set has to change and there are people running off stage to change costumes, and you only have a certain amount of time, usually seems to be happening in musicals. But you've got to have a strong, strong stage manager who works in conjunction with the director so that the two together creates the best tech possible.
Yeah, it's not just the special effects that you worry about. It's the normal stuff.
See, that's the thing. I think you're more aware of these things when you're doing like a musical or something like the 1940s musical murder mysteries or whatever it is, where all the panel people going in and out of panels all the time. You know that these could cause a problem. You know that this set change could be difficult. So you work on that. It's in a straight play where you don't, maybe you just are not aware that these things may cause a problem, you know?
Well,
like,
I think
like the crossbow
In Death Trap.
Right. Yeah. If that hits somebody, that's bad tech.
Yeah.
Bad tech,
right.
Ooh, bad tech.
Bad tech.
And something that we haven't talked about yet, and maybe we'll do it someday for a full episode, maybe, is about pre-planning. And tech often is about pre-planning.
Yeah.
You know, don't, and I think maybe it was Marcia during, just at the beginning of this episode, you said about making sure that things were ready to go and that you could tell somebody had used it as a last minute, it was a last minute thought that this needed to go. I mean, I don't know how long in Sherlock Holmes before we actually did the show, I'm saying to myself, how am I going to make a waterfall on stage? How am I going to do this? And every time I thought about it, it got more and more convoluted and it's more and more tech heavy. And until the point where I finally said, there must be something easy to do that's going to make this effect work.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being fog and blue light that gave us the effect that we were looking for.
Right.
And then we just had to figure out how to get the fog to drop correctly. But the idea was simply that if we hadn't started that pre-planning
early.
You know, and had started that process early and made my head go through the process of trying to think about how this was going to happen, when we really finally got into the crunch on it, which I didn't know if it was going to happen, at least my brain had gotten rid of half the stuff so that we were ready to go with the ideas that we did have. And then it's a collaboration at that point, you know. But it's pre-planning, especially if you know you're going to have a huge tech show, is important.
Well, I have several ADs that I work with, and then it's one of them in particular, and we all know who we're talking about probably, but he's better at the tech. It's not my strength. He's able to think ahead on that kind of stuff more than I usually have a good idea of what I want, what I'm going for, but Randy can come up with, you know, at least some preliminary concepts of how to do it. And very often it's the final, that's the way we're going to do it. Yeah. And so,
that's why community theater is a collaborative.
That's a collaborative thing.
I mean, as a tech director for our theater, I don't know what I would do if I didn't have some people in my building to collaborate with me. Gary Cobham, who collaborates with me on sound design, Mike Stoll, the same thing on sound design, Randy Zonker on lighting and just technical issues. Michael Green, who has come in, I don't know how many times, and I give him a dilemma and I'm going, I'm not real sure how to do this. How do I do this? And he says, just do this, and this. Yeah. And it's like, so it is in a community theater, it's a real collaboration.
And that's what I love about it. People bring their experiences from their professional lives into the technical thing. Randy works with the repair of recreation vehicles, but it's basically house plumbing and electrical and all kinds of things like that. And so,
engines,
you know,
motors.
And he loves to adapt that sort of thing to a theatrical performance. And it's similar with Michael and anybody else. People bring their own work experiences into the theater at all levels besides technical, but technical is one of them where, you know, they're in your community. Your community theater probably does the same thing. I'm talking to the audience now.
And you have to. I think you have to also because unless you're a community theater that has 20 people on staff, which there are very few and far between.
Laughing.
You know, where you have people with specialties on your staff, or you have the money to be able to hire those people with specialties to come in and do that work for you. For the most part, it has to be a collaboration. I mean, I can't possibly have, well, I guess I could, but I don't have all that stuff in my head. And so so to have a volunteer who has the ability to help me with I can say, I need this to happen and I know you can make it happen. Will you help me make it happen? And that's part of this whole collaboration that makes good tech.
Right. Yeah.
It makes good tech.
It's all part of putting together the best production that you can. It's not just the actors. It's not just the director. It's front and backstage all working together and everybody realizing that whatever job they have to do is equally important to the success of the production.
And I think that it's important for the director because I think it doesn't happen often enough. It's important for directors to make sure that cast members understand that they, in reality, are not the only cast members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that
true.
Because a lot of people come in to do a play, and then they find somehow the crew and technical people are kind of an annoyance or something. They have this problem with, that, well, they weren't here. They're not really the stars of the show. They're just, here to paint wood or something. And that really is something that I try to make sure everybody understands, especially new people who have never done anything before, who don't know how bad it could be without those people.
Yeah. Right, right.
And I think, well, of course, they do it in colleges. If you're studying theater, every student goes through every part of a production. They make costumes, they paint sets, they build sets, they work on lights, and they all, even if they really, their, you know, primary focus is performing, they come out with a really solid understanding of how important all these aspects are and what kind of respect you should give to the people that are doing that, mm-hmm. and not just, well, I'm on stage, I'm the star, you know?
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have today for Theater Geeks. Be sure to stop by www.theatergeeks.com and buy yourself a hat, buy yourself a mug, buy yourself a t-shirt. Spend a lot of money. This is a stimulus package for Theater Geeks. So stimulate our economy, help support the show. And also, if you've got an idea for a show or a question you'd like us to address on Theater Geeks, please send it along. You can send it along in an email right from the website. If you're so inclined, you could even send us an audio recording, and we'll put your very voice on our podcast so that people can hear you asking your question. So please get in contact with us. Help us make it a better show. We are always looking for good ideas. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.